You're listening to the Youth Crick Podcast on KHZ Network. Find us on Facebook at WUNG Radio and find us on Twitter at WUNG. If you like this episode, please leave a like and comment on our iTunes page at KHZ Network. And now for the podcast.
Universal Pictures presents everything you always wanted to do in high school with everyone you always wanted to do it with.
Hey, bud, let's party.
They're the students of Ridgemont High. Brad Hamilton, the fast food king.
I shall serve no fries before their time.
It says 100% guaranteed, you moron.
Mister, if you don't shut up, I'm going to kick 100% of your ass.
Charles Jefferson. A man with a mission.
Oh, gnarly!
Linda Barrett, not exactly the girl next door.
Awesome!
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Youth Critic Retrospective. I am your host, Kale Smith. Joining me today is Gina Versa from the Waffle Press.
Hi, how you doing?
And later on the show, we will have Andy Comer from Real Film Chatter come on, but as of right now, we're going to be talking about Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Mm-hmm. This movie came out a little over like a week and 35 years ago, and it's probably one of the best movies I'm getting to review on this retrospective series. I really love it. But before I go into it, Gene, what did you think of Fast Times at Ridgemont High?
I really dug it. I think I saw it not in high school. I saw it in college, and it's a very fun 80s movie. It's written by Cameron Crowe, who did Almost Famous, and Amy Heckerling directs it. And you know, it's just kind of like a really cool kind of like fantasy film of kind of how we all wanted high school to be, I guess. So, I really, really dig the movie.
And you mentioned it's like a fantasy movie, but I feel like, especially with the Jennifer Jason Leigh character, there is some like truth to it. There is some like, there's some realism in there. I mean, the movie opens with her like wanting to date a 26-year-old, even though she's like 15, and she goes on a date with him, and she's like, I'm gonna, you know, lose my virginity, and it's gonna be magical, wonderful, and of course, you know, she loses her virginity at a rundown ballpark.
I don't know. I think that's the probably right up there with what's that movie with what's the movie with Tom Cruise? Risky Business.
Yes.
Where he has sex on a train, a dirty train. That's probably like the second worst location for a sex scene in the film.
Yeah.
You know.
I still actually have to watch Risky Business.
Oh, okay. It's good.
That's like, and of course it's directed from her point of view, and she's, and you're just like, oh, poor thing.
Yeah.
But there's stuff like that. And then, but then there's, you know, you're right. There is like a fantasy in that everyone kind of works at the mall, and working at the mall is quite nice. No one ever complains at the mall they work at. No one ever gets like, no one like gets a wrong ticket at the movie theater. Or even the guy that's scalping tickets, like, doesn't, you know, he rarely runs into problems scalping tickets.
Yeah, so, no, not really. Yeah.
So it's a fantasy, but there is, you know, a tad of realism, especially with Jennifer Jason Leigh's character and the Judge Reinhold character, because you know, you get, so it works both ways. Like, there is if Phoebe Cates, who is like, you should do this and that, you know, like being the cool girl.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, the characters that are taking the advice, they're all just like dealing with realistic situations. So while it's built up to be a fantasy, there's a sense of realism in the characters and in their, you know, environment that they're kind of in. So, and that's what I really liked about the movie is that there are just situations that are fantasy. Like, it is a little ridiculous that that a teacher would come by someone's house in their own room and basically make them read history just so they can get it, just so they can pass the class.
Right.
That's a little, I mean, I don't know. I never was in that predicament, so I don't know. But still, it's like, it's really good, but still it's like there's stuff there. It works kind of both ways. It works as, you know, both like there's a teen fantasy to it, but within it, there's some realism in there. There's some
right, realism. Yeah. It's a very like exaggerated reality, it seems like. Mm-hmm. But I think it's, well, it's based on a book, and I think some of that did happen to Cameron Crowe. Do you know the backstory for the book?
Actually, do you know it? Because
you might know it's more like than Cameron Crowe. Oh yeah, sure. Cameron Crowe, who is, you know, before he was a director, he was like a reporter for like Rolling Stone and some other magazines, like one of the youngest, I guess, because he had like such a baby face and such a young look. He did this like story where he went undercover in high school. And I guess he did like a column. I guess when you could still do that for some reason, go undercover as like not a minor in high school. But he kind of wrote about his experiences there and just kind of growing up as a high school student in the 80s, because he kind of missed that in the 70s, because he was like, he jumped ahead a lot of grades and he was like on the road a lot, so he didn't really experience high school. And I want to say, I don't know if the Spicoli stuff is 100% true, but some of it is, you know, just taken directly from the book, from what I remember. So,
well, it's Cameron Crowe adapting his own book into, so I mean, so probably was, if there was stuff in the book, probably Cameron Crowe probably brought it in. So,
mm-hmm. Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So with that, so what else do you like about the movie, Gene?
Well, I mean, you know, it has an awesome 80s soundtrack, but, you know, that's always cool. But it just gives you a very, like, interesting snapshot of the 80s in a film, you know? It's, you know, I don't think I can think of another 80s movie where, you know, it talks about, like, abortion or, like, you know, just some of the sort of risque themes, I guess, during the time. So, no, it's just a very honest film, I guess.
Right. Yeah. I mean, in terms of talking about abortion, I want to say Lemon Popsicle was the movie that did that. It's, I don't know if you ever heard of that movie. Yeah,
I don't think so.
It's a canon movie, so.
Okay.
So.
Oh,
gee.
Yeah,
it's, I'm trying to look up the movie because I think I'm thinking of the Iranian version. Come on, give me.
Like,
what? I'm sorry.
Is it called like Last American Virgin or something?
Yes, that's it.
Oh wow. Yeah, I know that from the documentary about canon.
That was the movie where there's like an abortion scene that's being interspliced with pizza being cut. It's just like totally weird. And the abortion thing, it's like it happened and there's no like drama that's brought out of it.
In Fast Times?
In Fast Times.
Cool.
Yeah, or I don't think there was. Like, it's really just, like, the guy that knocked Jennifer Jason Leigh up essentially could not come or could not come and pay the thing, so he didn't show up. Mm-hmm. And so Jennifer Jason Leigh had to do this whole thing by herself, and then only really to ask, you know, her brother to, you know, drive her up there to the clinic.
Yeah.
And there's no, like, drama of it. Like, you don't have the brother going, why did you have an abortion? Why did...
Yeah.
like you don't have, or the male care, or the male character that got her knocked up going, why did you get, it's not yeah. like this overblown thing. And I feel like
right.
that in itself was risque or a risk, because abortion at the time, even a little bit today, it's still like a big controversy where, you know, people mm-hmm. where, you know, it's where it happens and it's presented a lot of times. It's like this big deal, this big dramatic moment, this big, I mean, even obvious child kind of makes, that's kind of the plot of that movie. Mm-hmm. Not dash at that movie, but that is essentially the plot of that movie, is Jenny Slate getting an abortion. And of course, but in Fast Times, it's like she had it, she took care of it, and that was the end of it. So yeah. that's, and I kind of admire that. It's like, this is like what teenagers have to go through if this, you know, happens. They have to kind of deal with the humiliation of it. They have to, you know, they have to keep it secret to themselves because they don't feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of appreciated that a little bit. Like, yeah, it's a fantasy version of it that everything turned out to be okay, but still,
yeah,
that's the thing about this movie, is it is a bit of a fantasy, but there's under its surface, there's just hints of reality.
Yeah, I know for sure. Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's very honest, I guess. But yeah, I mean, you know, it doesn't linger on it too much, and you know, yeah, I mean, I think it did affect her in a way. It kind of, you know, the drama of it, because then she breaks up with that guy, the Judge Reinhold character, whose name escapes me. But yeah, yeah, no, I think there's, you know, some drama to it.
Yeah, and I mean, well, there is. I mean, Phoebe Cates makes the whole ordeal about mm-hmm. him being a prick. I think to the point where she's the one that kind of makes the print, like, on his car and his locker, that prick, mm-hmm. you know. And and even so, and yeah, and they do break up, but. But I mean, I think the subplot only lasted 15 minutes in the movie. That's why I kind of saying right. it's not that much. Yeah. I mean, there's more other subplots like that get a little bit more time, I should say. That's what I kind of mean by that. Is,
oh, yeah. Okay.
So what did you think of the direction of the movie? I know we keep talking about it's kind of is a fantasy, but what did you think, Amy... Heckling, I think.
Heckling.
What did you think about her work on this?
You know, she is a very underrated director. You know, she's probably one of the most prominent kind of female directors in the 80s, along with Catherine Bigelow. But you know, she did a great job, and it was kind of, I think the film benefits from a female touch, you know, just how it, you know, handles the female characters. They're not, you know, like a lot of female characters in the 80s, they're kind of like cliches, you know, they're very, you know, one sort of character. But, you know, this film, everyone feels very real, and, you know, she did a tremendous job, like, doing character work. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, she's and she should probably direct more.
Yeah, she unfortunately got relegated to she's currently working in television. Yeah. I'm looking at her IMDb right now, and she directed Red Oaks. She directed some episodes for Red Oaks. And she hasn't directed anything since like last year. It is sad. She is underrated because, I mean, it feels like sort of almost every generation, every like decade except for the 2000s, she kind of like comes out with a teen movie that kind of blows everyone away. Like in the 80s, it was Fast Times at Ridgemont High. And then a decade later, she brings us Clueless. And she works, and she worked on, you know, a lot of CW stuff. And so, I mean, she's, you know, she knows how to, you know, put teens in her movies. And I think the reason why this movie kind of is special is because, you know, unlike something like Porky's, which is very much male dominated, you're going to see, you know, women, you know, they're just there to kind of show off tits and, and you're just there for the experience of even for boys, and even both Lemon Popsicle and Last American Virgin, they're all from a male perspective. Even though we did mention there is an abortion scene, it is still from a male perspective. And because I feel like Fast Times at Ridgemont High has a female director, you get scenes that have dialogue scenes that with the, you know, with the female characters, with Phoebe Cates and Jennifer Jason Leigh. You get, you know, you get the point of view of, like, from her point of view of all the sex scenes for Jennifer Jason Leigh. And, you know, to so much an extent that you have one of your, during one of the sex scenes, you have a male character that just, like, it ejaculates, like, ejaculates like as soon as the sex starts. And you and her reaction is just like, wait, what? And then he leaves, and it's like, and you just get, so it's just like these interesting little things that, you know, that you don't see in high school comedies, where I don't even think, maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't even think, I've never seen a teen comedy where it shows kids at work this much. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't see a lot of kids in teen movies that actually go to work or have afternoon jobs.
Yeah, no, I can't think of too many, like right off the top of my head.
Because like, I know...
What was Marty's job in Back to the Future?
Being a musician. Being an independent musician. Maybe he made some money working with Doc.
Probably, but you don't see him, like, you know, say, no, this is my job.
You don't see him at work. Usually Doc gives him some money and he goes and does whatever. But yeah, so I just like these like little touches that Amy Heckling made to like make it feel human, to make it relatable, versus I'm now just going to make a wacky teen comedy. Which is kind of, it is kind of interesting to see where she went afterwards. She did National Lampoon's European Vacation. And I don't know if you ever saw that movie, but I don't remember that movie in such a high light.
Not really. It was kind of whatever.
I mean, I haven't seen it in years, but I don't think, I didn't think it was that good. And then, she did the Look Who's Talking movies.
Oh God.
And she did, obviously she did Clueless, and I think, she did a movie called Vamps. It's a little independent movie. mm-hmm. with Alicia Silverstone and Kristen Winter.
About vampires?
Mm-hmm. So, and apparently Kristen Winter has like a really big spray tan, like a big
okay.
So I'm just looking, and it's just kind of interesting that she never grew up bigger than Fast Times at Ridgemont High to me, other than Clueless. Yeah. And it's a little sad, I feel like, because I think she, looking at this movie, I'm like, this is a director who can take relatable characters and make characters and make a situation that normally would be like a wacky teen comedy, but make it interesting, make it compelling.
Right.
So, but however, I mean, it spawned Cameron Crowe's career. So
yeah.
Yeah. And even he's like not making a lot of movies nowadays. He's not making a whole lot of content. Well, I lie. He's made. What were we going to say?
Well, I was going to say he's making content, but it's like, you know, like Aloha.
Yeah.
You don't want to see that.
I heard it was really boring.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like one of the worst movies of 2015, I would say at least.
Yeah, so before we get going to Andy, do we have any more final thoughts on Fast Times at Ridgemont High? Or do you have any more final thoughts?
You know, I think it's the epitome of, like, 80s films. You know, if you want any good 80s films, you should probably look to that. So there's a lot of bad ones. And, yeah, you know, it's cool that it showed teenagers in such a honest light, I guess.
All right, and we're gonna go to Andy for the next segment. But before I let you go, Gene, mm-hmm. where can the good people find you? And tell us what you've been working on lately.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So you could find me on Twitter, Instagram, Gene9892. You could follow me through the Waffle Press. You can see all the podcasts we do. And We Own Nothing Films on Facebook for like short films. Lately, you know, just been working at the Asylum, finishing my third film with them. It was a Lifetime movie. Not sure what the name will end up being, but the second movie, I think I did, it's called Geo Disaster, comes out in October. Probably hope it be better than Geo Storm, but other than that, just been podcasting. We just did a special with Anthony Cifranti, the director of Sharknado. So check that out. It's really fun. He talks a lot about the films and some other stuff, like Donald Trump almost being president in one of the Sharknados. So yeah, check that out. And yeah, on iTunes now, since we have that open.
Awesome. I will put links in the description below this podcast. Gene, thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Thank you
for
being on this. We would love to have you back soon. Okay. And we'll be back. And we will now move on to Andy. Thanks, Gene. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Youth Critic Retrospective. I'm now here with Andy Comer from Real Film Chatter. Andy, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm good. We just had Gene earlier, Gina Versa on earlier, and I was at Ridgemont High. So I'm going to ask you, starting with you, like, what did you think of the movie?
This movie, when I was in like high school, I had heard that was the first time I heard about it, and that it was like one of those classic, you know, teenage coming of age type films. And I decided to go check it out, and I found it and bought it blind buy, and then I watched it that night and was instantly rewarded because it is a great film. One of the I'd say it's like top tier 80s you know, teenage films about like high school and, you know, the different kinds of people that you come across in high school and like how you get through it and everything like that. And, you know, it's just a great film that I think ages well, you know, like they deal with all, like, you know, guys dealing with girls and, you know, teachers and, you know, dealing with stoners and like preps and, or, you know, like preppy guys and like, you know, all the different cliches of high school are involved. And it's just a one of those timeless films that I'm going to know that I know I'm going to enjoy for the rest of my life. And it's really special, a good film.
Yeah, I this and Poltergeist for this retrospective series have been the biggest surprise, because this too, I did not watch it beforehand. I had seen parts of it, like I'd seen the opening and the first like sex scene in the movie. However, so this was my like first time watching it, and I had a total blast watching this movie from beginning to end. This was endlessly fun. And not to repeat some of my, you know, not to repeat some of my things I said in with Gene, but I agree with you. Like, it is a great movie about boys talking about girls, but it's also about girls talking about boys. And you brought up the stereotype thing, or the stereotypes, and I feel like, maybe for the exception of Mr. Hart, you get a sense that all these characters are fleshed out. Like, they have their own, like, personal struggles. They have their own lives. And we see them, you know, for 90 minutes, like, just living their normal lives. They're not, like, it's, they're not, like, a sort of heightened version of these lives. Obviously, because it's still cinema, it's still it's still a movie through the eyes, through, you know, a movie lens, but the thing is, there's still like these characters you can relate to, and these characters are not just horny guys and girls with boobs. Like, that's not what Fast Time at Ridgemont High is. It's about these characters that are kind of exploring their own, you know, their own, like, you know, persons, while their own sexuality, their own, you know, they're exploring themselves, and seeing it through the lens of a teen comedy that's sort of a drama was really fascinating, given that I remember seeing Porky's as a teenager and thinking, oh, so this is what all 80s teen sex comedies are like, except for Back to the Future. Back to the Future is that sort of one that decided to not have sex and nudity. Like, that's how my teenage brain worked, because I saw Porky's and I was like, yeah, this is going, so this is what every film was like. But Fast Times is kind of an exception.
Yeah, definitely. It's one of those rare, you know, teen comedies where coming of age ones where they really dive into girls talking amongst themselves about guys. You know, I feel like in most movies, they don't get that aspect as much. Nearly, it's like nowhere near as much as like guys. And, you know, it had its own whole section with like one of the girls being nervous about going out with a guy and being nervous about, like, you know, having sex with a guy and stuff like that. And it's just really, it's just one of those films that really tackled both sides and is really fair, I would say, to all sides. And it's just something that everybody should see. It's just, like I keep saying, it's like one of the like best 80 team films, and everybody should definitely see it.
Yeah, this is one of the better ones. Now, Andy, before we get to the production history, what other like 80s teen comedies do you like? Because you mentioned that there's a couple others that you liked just as much as Fast Times.
I'd say like Breakfast Club, Pretty in Pink, all those guys' movies.
The John Hughes movies.
Yeah, the John Hughes movies. You know, what else? What other 80s teens came out? Comedies came out. There's a ton. drawing a blank. I don't know why right now. But
does Back to the Future count?
I wouldn't say that that one counts. As like, because that one's not a, that one's more about you know, the dilemma that he's in. There's there's like little bits of sex like peppered through because of the, you know, he has to try to hook up with his mom and all that's, or well, not hook up with her, but like he has to distract his mom in the car and she's trying to seduce him and stuff, but doesn't go really beyond that. These, like this film is all, and this film, and like you mentioned Porky's, is strictly about, you know, guys trying to get laid, girls trying to get laid, stuff like that. Another one I guess would be Risky Business. I really love that movie too. That just came into mind. Yeah, it's, but it's definitely top tier. You know, Cameron Crowe did a great script on it. Just, and then like everybody, well, I don't know, I guess I don't know how popular any of them were back then. But most of the characters are not in, or not, most of the actors are not in other big movies. So like it helps you see them as real, real people rather than actors, even though some of the acting is kind of subpar. But you know, you really feel the situations and the characters that they get in, or that the characters or feel for the characters as they try to get their way through the school year and deal with all the different things that they have to deal with, like Spicoli dealing with Mr. Hand and you know, what's his face trying to get go out with Stinky, and you know, getting 50-50, I would say 50-50 advice from his best friend, who also ends up like hang or like hooking up with her and ruining, you know, his friendship with him because, you know, they were just all trying to get laid, stuff like that. And it just has some serious and some funny aspects, and you know, just teenagers being teenagers, and it feels super real. It's probably like, I wouldn't say it's like one of the like top 100 films of all time, but I would say that it's one of the most real teen movies out there in the ways that they interact with each other and how everybody like deals with their own issues.
Yeah, I agree. It's, I mean, you have, you know, Stacy, who's played by Jennifer Jason Leigh, you have her trying to find her own way, and then you have Mark trying to hook up with Stacy, and then you have, like you mentioned, Spicoli, and then you have the Forrest Whitaker's character. Like, he's, you know, his whole arc is, you know, I love my car, and if anyone destroys it, I'm going to screw with them. I'm going to basically destroy them. And it's all these little things that are just like,
I knew that guy in high great school. Stuff. I knew that girl in high school.
Yeah. Yeah. I knew these people, and I knew these people, they worked hard and they tried. And I even made the point in my last segment, or in the last segment, that, you know, you see these kids working. Like, that is such a huge deal. Like, I don't think in Porky's or in Back to the Future doesn't count, but or Breakfast Club, or definitely not in 16 Candles. You don't see a lot of people working. You don't see like teenagers having to like work to make, you know, spending money.
Yeah. Another thing is those movies are over the course of a day, usually, because it's like, you know, the night of the party. Like, I know it was in the 90s, but Dazed and Confused is a day. Breakfast Club is a day. Risky Business is a few weeks, or maybe, no, it's only a week, right? Risky Business is only a week. This movie is over the course of the entire school year. So you really get to know these characters through a bunch of different situations, and I feel like that really helps it separate from all the other films.
Yeah, and look, I mean, if Breakfast Club, like, yeah, that's fair that they have, that structure doesn't require them to show them to go to work, but it's just, you know, if you have a movie like Fast Times Ridgemont High where the structure of the story or the progression of the story is over the course of a school year, I thought that was really wise to show like teenagers actively working in a mall, because that's where you will find most teenagers working, especially nowadays. Yeah, especially now, and it's teens and college students. Like I see both of wherever I go. So getting into the production history of Fast Times at Ridgemont High, it started out, like we mentioned, it was a book by Cameron Crowe himself, wrote a whole book about the lives of teenagers, and it gained enough attraction that he went off to, and he sold it off. And originally, David Lynch was going to direct the movie. Like, he was offered to do it. But the more, like, he kind of worked with, you know, Crow, and the more he kind of, you know, spitballed the idea around of him directing Fast Times, he was like, this is just not for me. Like, he realized that it wasn't going to work under his direction. So he left the project to go work on Dune. And so it came to Amy Heckling, who I don't think she directed anything before this. This was her first film, and Universal worked with her to, you know, get her into this, you know, get her easy into this $5 million movie. And of course, you know, casting, like, they spent a long time, several months casting everyone. Even to the point where Jennifer Jason Leigh actually got a job, like, for, like, while she was waiting for them to start filming in late 1981. So it went for about 5 weeks, and they shot in the Van Nuys High School, and then they worked on the movie until late July, and then they released it. And the box office of the movie was, come on, IMDb, work with me. Oh, come on, IMDb, don't crash. Hold on, it doesn't specify. It made about $27 million domestically. It doesn't have a worldwide gross on IMDb. So it did really well. It did like five times its budget and more. And I think it actually, it did about 6 million, six times more than what it cost. So it did really well. It did very well at the box office. One of the things that I found interesting was they only had like a couple weeks to shoot all the mall stuff. So they would just, and they could only shoot at night. So whenever they had to do like the Christmas decorations, they just had to like put it up and they had to wait for like the mall to become like holiday festive. So during the holiday festive stuff, they shot it, that stuff last, while also like trying to help the mall, like get it like set decorated for like Christmas stuff. So just interesting facts I discovered about the movie. And as far as Andy, let me ask you this. What did you think of the music of the movie, the soundtrack of it?
It's great. Just like every, like, you know, 70s and 80s set, like, teen movie, you know, like, I love, you know, Zeppelin and all that stuff. Especially like that they incorporate that, the music into one of the scenes where, like, they're giving advice on what to do when you're making out, and then it just like cuts to them listening to that song awkwardly as they drive, and it's like really loud to the point where they have to yell at each other and to turn it down and stuff, and it just works really well. And I thought that it really helps give it that vibe of the 80s. And you know, it's always one of those like a bunch of those songs where you can, you know, you're familiar with it even if you don't know it very well, you've heard it before and you always want to just bop your head to it.
Another good use of the music for me was every time Stacy has sex. They play the
You make her sound like a whore.
What?
You make her sound like a whore. Every time she has sex.
Okay, to be fair,
she does have the most sex she does have the most sex in the movie. So
she does, and it's only twice. She only has sex twice in the movie. Yeah,
almost a third time.
Yeah, that came out wrong. That came out wrong. Every time that she has sex in the movie, it's somebody's baby, and it's like incorporating, like, you know, this kind of like nice little like love song in mixed with, you know, her having sex. And, you know, both times that she has sex in the scenes, like, you can tell that she's just like not impressed at all.
Yeah, because she's looking like, for love. She's not looking for sex, and she thinks that that sex will lead the guy to start loving her, and she doesn't understand that, you know, it, like, you need to get to know the guy and stuff like that beforehand, and then it'll mean something more. And then she figures that out later. But, you know, she's being misled by her friend, who is just like talking up how amazing sex is and how that's like the top priority and all that stuff, which, you know, when you're a teen, everybody knows that person that is all about sex. And so it's another thing that, like, I know that person, like, they're wrong and this is hilarious, but, you know, this person shouldn't be listening to them.
And that's kind of like, you know, the innocence of Stacy is that she's like, she's just trying to discover, like, what is love. And of course, you know, Phoebe gives her terrible advice to the point where, you know, she sleeps with a guy that, you know, basically screwed her over, or that's, you know, not a really decent person.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, this led her down to a, you know, probably at the time, a very pricey abortion. And she has to, like, do it all on her own. Like, it, you know, the movie doesn't, like, hold back, you know, that the fact that, you know, sometimes, you know, sometimes women have to, like, have this, like, you know, these abortions on their own. And that was the other thing too, is that, you know, there's like an abortion scene, and I think by not making it a big deal, I think says something about the movie. Like, it's a subplot for 15 minutes, and then it's never brought up that much again in the movie.
Yeah.
By the way, while you're here, why did you think of the abortion subplot?
I thought it was, you know, important for her character, because, you know, she learned that there are consequences to, you know, trying to get a guy to love her that way. You know, that could have been permanent. And then she has to, found a new trust and in her brother through it. And I think that helped them both, you know, to show that, you know, their family comes first, and that even though they fight over petty stuff, like, they're there for each other and stuff like that. And I thought that really helped both characters. And then it also helped show how much of a douchebag, can't think of his name.
Mike is.
Yeah.
I think it's Mike.
And it just shows, like, you know, because he was shown to be the, like, hipster cool guy. Like, you know, he thinks he's the coolest and knows everything, and he's, like, leading his friend on. And, like, he's seen, like, only really with him, and he's supposed to be, like, the coolest guy, but he has no idea what he's doing or what he's talking about. He's just, like, everybody else, completely clueless. But, you know, and then underneath, he's just a coward where everyone, or, and this kid that, you know, has a better heart than him is, like, really looking up to him until he realizes, you know, how full of shit he is. So that subplot has a lot of ties that I feel like helped bring out each character.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is one of the most, Yeah. I think you just said it right there. It's like, that's what this whole movie is about. It's to look at each of these characters and look at their vulnerabilities and to see how they grow throughout a whole year in their lives, especially Judge Reinhold's character, as he has quote unquote the best job until he has like the one worst day ever. His friend was like, because his friend needed to go to the bathroom, and so he had to work the cashier and deal with customers. And it's just one of the, I don't know, this is for me one of those movies that was an instant surprise, and I loved it, and I will continue watching this. This was so great. This is a great find. And Andy, do you have any more thoughts on this movie?
Yeah, definitely go see it. It's, if you haven't, I see it every couple of years, just because it's so good, and you know, it just you know, you just find different things every couple of years that, like, you know, just ring true. Like, you're just like, yep, that's the way it was. That's how people are, you know, that kind of thing. And it's just, I think it is one of those important films, like for coming of age films, to realize that sometimes you're wrong in who you look up to, and to make sure that you do look into yourself to see what's important to you and go with what you feel is best. You know, you can ask advice and stuff like that, but if it doesn't feel right, do what you think is right. It's just, yeah, it's just also so entertaining. Like, everything with Spicoli, you know, with Forrest Whitaker's character, like all that stuff is so funny, and then all the deep stuff on the other end, it just hits everything on the spectrum. So definitely go see it. If you haven't seen this movie, it's a crime. Like, you're just hurting yourself.
Yes, please go and see Fast Times at Ridgemont High. And before we go into plugins, Andy, what character would you say would you relate most to in this kind of like stock of characters? Because I feel like I'm more like Brad, Judge Reinhold's character.
I would probably be, like Mark. I was kind of quiet in high school. I don't know. I don't think that Brad had like a lot of like buddies, you know, he was well known and stuff like that. I was kind of like that too. So like, I don't know, like, depends on what time, I guess. Like the first couple of years I was probably like Mark, and then I turned into like a Brad. So yeah.
Yeah, sometimes I feel like a combination of Brad and Mark, or I felt like a combination of them both, where I was quiet, but I also like tried to be a decent, cool person in front of like the kids, even though I was kind of more dorky. Yeah. Got it. But yeah, this was, so with that's on that note, Andy, where can the good people find you?
You can find me on Twitter and on Letterboxd at The Talking Can. Just come on and, you know, say something to me, say, hey, bring me in your opinion, and then we can talk about movies.
All right. And you can find me on Twitter at MovieKale. You can also follow this podcast and like for all the updates on the podcast and for the other like two shows, the React Show and the main podcast, at The Youth Critic. And you can also follow KHC Network, the channel that distributes this podcast, at KHC Network. And that's it for this week, folks. As this was slated as to be the season finale of the retrospective series, however, I am planning on doing more like throughout the rest of the year and continuing it more. I don't know if we'll do a summer of 83. We might do more of a summer of 93 next summer, because there's a lot more stuff to talk about in the summer of 93 with Jurassic Park and Last Action Hero. Then 83, which only really has Risky Business and Star Wars, I think. That's, and I've talked to death about Star Wars, so next month we'll have one or two, and then we'll have a horror retrospective series. It'll be announced later what that is, and I don't know what we'll do for November and December. But Andy, thank you so much for being on this podcast, and also out there, thank you, Gene. Thank you, Gina Versa. Thank you so much. And we will be back soon with the Logan Lucky and Hitman Bodyguard podcast. And thanks everyone for joining me. Andy, thank you for coming on again. And we will be back with you soon.